Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamplet and Michael Sudrick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT and AEW Dynamite, but also Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a Bundiga quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by the Dudley Boys to talk about NXT. And as I was saying to you two before we started recording, a show that I felt was designed specifically for me. I really enjoyed it, probably because it featured all of my favourites. But what did you think, Michael Hamplet?
I'm legitimately impressed with how quick NXT has snapped back to the pre-war version of itself. The problem comes is that half of the episodes in there pre-war version of itself were barely watchable. Functional to a fault was one of the old criticisms of NXT as a weekly show, because the takeovers are so brilliant and that's why it existed to be functional. They have done it. They have moved almost instantly back to a two-hour edition of the old version of NXT. But I don't know if that's going to make for good weekly episodic television, because bits of this were fine and I liked seeing the functional movement of a couple of characters and a couple of stories. I wasn't terribly entertained by a lot of it. So they've got a new little challenge to have with themselves. Rather this than the worst of the war excesses. Absolutely rather this. But they've got a few challenges finding a new normal for USA Network's Tuesday night NXT.
Here's the thing about me and NXT, and this might come as a shock to regular listeners, but I don't really like it. I like format. I don't like the fact that performers backstage just captured via an invisible camera seem to materialize next to each other to just engineer some contrived conflict, which is just written with the most basic, forgettable lines. Like, can you recall anything that Bronson Reed might have said to LA Knight 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So indistinct. Content churn. Dialogue kind of sucks. The way the conflicts are arrived at just feels like there's no energy to it. It's just a formula that I've grown to hate and a style that I've grown to hate. However, because of the roster, there are always moments on the show that will pop you. There are always, or not always, but there are fairly often matches that'll just think, well, these are great wrestlers. It's a brand that I don't watch as an episodic concern. I don't think about as an episodic concern. And yet they have wrestlers on it that I sometimes love. And I fell in love with one said wrestler tonight. And if I watch it because I like a wrestler, then God damn it, it's better than Raw.
Yeah, I can't decide whether I like, obviously, as I said, enjoyed this show because of the performers that were featured. But yet again, I can't decide whether I like this show just for in and of itself, whether I like this show more because I was like, well, at least it's not Monday Night Raw, or whether I like this show more than I would have done, say, on like a Thursday morning, because I wouldn't have already watched 2 hours of AEW and be comparing it to that. Anyway, let's get into it, and we'll delve into that as it goes. We started the show with Cool Kyle O'Reilly. He came out. You asked for it, you two. He came out. He had a denim jacket on. He had shades on. He had a fedodo on his head. He was rocking the look. And he popped me by saying, hey guys, can we raise the lights a little bit? And then, oh, I'm wearing my sunglasses inside. He talks about Wanting his work to speak for itself. He said he's moving on from Adam Cole, thank goodness. He found that killer instinct that he needed. And he talked about what was next. Was he going to go after the workhorse title, that being the NXT North American Championship, or the biggest man in NXT? He wasn't sure, but he had, quote, all the time in the world to decide before he went on more about Karrion Kross, though. The greatest man in NXT interrupted. Karrion Kross, baby, to the moon! This was a great start to the show. Any show that starts with Cameron Grimes within the first 5 minutes is good by me. He comes out, he says, congratulations to Kyle O'Reilly on defeating Adam Cole, and said thanks as well because he made a killing betting on him on DraftKings because he was the underdog. And then he even offered a partnership. And I thought, oh, I mean, there obviously weren't, but I thought, just imagine. He said, oh, look, we can profit off this. We could even take you diving onto Cole and turn it into an NFT. I still don't really understand what an NFT is, even though all the kids are talking about it online. O'Reilly sort of plays along with him, suggests that they should be business associates. And he said, actually, as well, I've been cleared to compete. And my first opponent will be, puts the shades on like he's in bloody They Live or something. You knobhead. And just chins Cameron Grimes to set up the main event of the night. Michael Sidgwick, what did you think of this opening segment and cool Kyle O'Reilly?
Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. As a segment of television, kind of putrid, phoned in WWE content churn fair, introductory promo, interruption, conflict somehow. Oh, well, just as well, we didn't have a main event planned. Like, I hate it. And I will tell you every single time it happens that I hate it. It's become the norm, and I've been just rallying against this norm for the past 20 goddamn years of my goddamn life. Putting that to one side. Cool Kyle O'Reilly. What do I think of this? It's an obvious and necessary attempt to translate Kyle O'Reilly's, like, knobhead heel charisma, like dorky heel charisma, into a babyface ace role. I'm not terribly convinced it was a big smash success. It's quoting Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, it was Dumb and Dumber, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Like, he's not cool, but I think that's the point. I don't think they've captured that point yet in itself. He's obviously not cool, Kyle O'Reilly. He's lovable, endearing, dork Kyle O'Reilly who can kick your head in. There's potential to this act insofar as there's far more potential in this act than there was brooding, goth-adjacent, miserablest, listening to Joy Division in his bedroom, Kyle O'Reilly. Like, this is much more Kyle O'Reilly than that, but I still think it's flanderized to an extent. It's very WWE broad. And the problem I had with the segment and his actions in it rather than the overall characterization, which might have potential, it might. I don't trust WWE to do a character like this, is that lean more on the endearing. He knows he's not that cool, but he's laughing at the notion of cool, which can work. Make him endearing. Don't make him do the dickhead WWE babyface thing of just punching someone unwarranted. Did Cameron Grimes really do anything wrong here? He didn't patronize Kyle O'Reilly. He didn't even suggest that. He didn't even do like the big money Matt Hardy thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to take all your money. If he even just let slip an aside of, you know, I'll take 60% and you can have 40 or something like that. They were already ripping off AEW with the Cassidy get up. So why not do big money Matt as well? But what I'm trying to arrive at here is a take that they could have healed Cameron Grimes more because he just came across as endearing and wanted to be his pal. And then in response to that, Kyle O'Reilly punched him in the face. It's like, it's so WWE values were imposed on this character and I just could not get away with it.
The only way I would defend it, and this is stretching it to the nth degree in terms of, oh, this is probably what they thought maybe, is him, Cameron Grimes, suggesting making an NFT, whatever the bloody hell that is, of O'Reilly and Cole, or O'Reilly finishing off Cole, is him saying, hey, let's profit off one of your, you know, biggest tumultuous relationships or whatever. But that is, even for me, Sidge, that's a stretch. Hamplet, what did you think of all this?
I mean, yeah, like agree with a lot of what Sidgwick said, to be honest. Like, that punch was full John Cena, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The baby face that just is like above everything and too smart for everything, even if you support, even if part of this character is to kind of come across a little bit like stupid or a little bit silly. So the character direction felt a bit all over the place. I still didn't really buy, like, I kind of still imagined Kyle O'Reilly asking what his motivation was and him not being clear and therefore that not coming across. I wasn't sure, like, in terms of that pretty awful takeover main event, this wasn't so much as putting lipstick on a pig as it was a hat on a workhorse. Like, they've just put like this straw hat and glasses on a guy. Which, by the way, like, Limmy did an amazing bit in series 3 of his show where, like, he's the arsehole in the park. What about if I did this? Pretty annoying, right? Like, that's basically how Kyle O'Reilly was dressed. Like, so they've nailed irritating dickhead in a park now that parks are back open again in one night. Yeah, it didn't really land for me. I wanted to believe that there was an art to this at the start. I wanted this to believe that, like, the way he was dressed and the way he was talking was an overreach to tell us that he was fine, whereas in reality, he wasn't fine. Yeah. Like, I wanted that to be the story, that, hey guys, like, Adam Cole's done with, and like, we all know, and he knows that we know, that it's not done with, is it? There's going to be another match, there's going to be more to do. We've seen them shouting at each other in the hospital corridor, and he's faking it till he makes it this week. And then everything with Cameron Grimes, and everything else about the way the character played out for the rest of the night, said that, no, this is actually who he is as a real person. It's like, oh, I don't actually like that real person, so I think I'd rather you were masking that things aren't fine. Just a very, I'm not going to like jump on, it's week one, I guess, for this gimmick. So I'm not going to like jump down its throat yet, but I don't particularly think this was a very successful rollout of what they've attempted to do.
They've tried to do a boy popper and this boy didn't pop.
I'm with you there, Hamlet, in terms of, I'd like to think that this is, I'm fine. Look, I've got a fedora on. Clearly I've moved on. But yeah, that, I don't know. We always talk about the lack of nuance with WWE. But yeah, so I couldn't tell here whether they were like, you know, we'll dial it back and we'll just, you know, plant the seeds, like you say. We don't have to go all out. We're not going head-to-head with anyone and we, you know, we don't have to really showcase it in big letters early on. Or whether they're just, it's not happening at all and we're just trying to see something that's not even there. Anyway, we had the debutante Saray entering the building. It was shown her greeting William Regal and Zoe Stark. Very respectably, coming up to her, welcoming her and asking if she could wrestle her tonight, which was lucky because Regal didn't have any bloody plans. So, yes, they got the match set.
Well, this was booked as well, wasn't it? This match was booked. This was already on. I'm pretty sure we, like, talked about this as a match.
We might have booked it. I don't know if it was actually announced.
Okay. All right. I thought this was like... Okay. I thought this was, like, superfluous and they'd already booked it and forgotten that they put, like, a Twitter graphic up and that would be best to have been yet.
I'm still waiting for bloody Randy Orton versus Braun Strowman from Monday night, but still. And then we had L.A. Knight. He was there backstage cutting a promo, shooting on the gauntlet eliminator, slagging off Dex Loomis, saying he was going to turn his on switch off. And then we got L.A. Knight versus Dexter Loomis. And I quite enjoyed it. Not the match, obviously, before you two both jumped down my throat, but whisper it. Really, you know, I'm a guy who loves love, guys. And I kind of am into this surreal Indy Hartwell story. So Loomis, obviously, at the start of the match, he's in control because LA Knight starts trash-talking him as the match begins. We go to a break. Obviously, LA Knight's in control, so we come back from the break. Loomis makes a comeback, but Knight's targeting his back. He shoves him into the ring apron. Then they're brawling at ringside. And Loomis notices... Indy Hartwell is stood there and they do the whole hand on the glass thing and then slowly walk sideways. It was just a massive gap, obviously, so they can actually interact with each other. They look longingly into each other's eyes. And that allows LA Knight to, of course, recover. Sneak attack on Dexter Loomis. He starts bollocking and mocking Indy Hartwell. Loomis comes off the top rope because he's been chucked in the ring by LA Knight. Comes off the top rope to the outside with a flying axe handle and again gets distracted by his one true love, Indy Hartwell. That allows Knight to recover, get in the ring, and he hits a sort of cutter through the ropes as Loomis is getting back in. LA Knight pins him. Post-match, Hartwell and Loomis are about to kiss on the apron when Johnny Gargano ruins everything. He comes out, he says, no, I'm not, this isn't happening right now. Austin Theory's carrying Hartwell away, and Candice and Johnny are shouting at everyone. Before we get into the fallout from this later on, Hamlet, your thoughts on the match and the beginnings of young love?
Well, this was a bad match, wasn't it? But then, you know, you've got two guys that combined age like 75, so they need more time to work out the kinks on this developmental show, don't they? Yeah, rubbish, really poorly executed, like just offensively drab for your television opener. This is kind of what I'm talking about how there's going to be quite an adjustment period of this becoming, this morphing from the one-hour network version to the two-hour television show. Crowds would have helped it, perhaps, but it was bad. I'm with you. I like the angle. I genuinely like the angle. Like, I'm poking a bit of fun at it in the way that I'm enjoying it, in that it's, like, it's so broad and it's so, like, it's so daft in the way it's drawn and the way it's presented. But I feel like I said this before, there is space for a Dexter Lumis when the stuff he's involved with isn't of, like, primary championship concern. Honestly, it's sometimes the closest NXT comes to a bit of variation, quite honestly. Indi Hartwell's performing really well in this role, and has done since the beginning, because the person she has to bounce off stands and stares. So it can't be underestimated, like, how much she needs to do to help get this over. They're allowing you to question if it's true love or if it's a long con, by the way, because of, obviously, Gargano and Theory's frustrations with Lumis and having no idea how to penetrate this, like, emotionless shell. So I quite like that. As long as this never matters, I like it. Honestly.
Yeah, if I put my NXT Redemption glasses on, then yes, I do like this. I like it, even though fundamentally it's stupid. The fact that wins and losses don't matter. He'd rather get his hole than get his W. And it's just like, when you watch a show like AEW Dynamite, which is so energetic and vibrant, and there's permutations seeping out of every single development, something like this just simply does not stack up. And I know we're not comparing it anymore, but a standard's been set now. A standard has been set, and I just can't get away with this kind of stuff anymore. However, as a reviewer who is bound to watch this show because, you know, I want to feed my family, I will pay more attention to and be more invested than this, than some drab 3.25-star match. It's just, you know, it's more interesting, I guess. My problem with this is that fundamentally, and he could levy this criticism, I'm a consistent guy, at something like AEW Dynamite, is that all episodic wrestling TV is kind of fundamentally flawed and or bad just in general, because everything happens in the lives of these people within these 2 hours. Like, very little happens off screen. And these things only happen when they're on it. And it's so contrived. Like, they're not just had a date or something. Saturday night. But no, everything has to happen on the TV show. And when you rub the viewer's face in that to the detriment of a finish or the fact that a win and loss should matter and it won't, that's when I just get, like, knocked. Like, I really do. Match itself was very, very drab, as one would expect. And I'm still shipping. I'm shipping Indi Hartwell and Dexter Lumis because I feel like, for frivolous second match fare, there's a certain, and it's Indi Hartwell dragging this over the line for the kinks. I genuinely think it's amusing. So I am into this, heavily caveated into it.
Yeah, again, I feel like bloody one of the mutants that goes after you on Twitter, Sidge, because the counter argument I would offer is the reason why it has to happen every Tuesday night is because Gargano's so bloody controlling of his stable that the only time they get to see each other, Romeo and Juliet style, is when they're both working on a Tuesday night. Everything he controls, everything else she does. I mean, yes, obviously, like you say, what, doesn't social media exist? Doesn't she have a phone, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah.
It just, I've got great taste in things. Right, just in general. In wrestling, so often, just doesn't stack up to my great taste and other things. Like, I'm so pedantic with pro wrestling because I've just got good taste in things. Optics of this weren't held. Like, get Indi Hartwell away from that monster and carried into the arms of Austin Theory. I mean, that never helps.
So we had a quick backstage promo from Leon Ruff saying that Swerve knocked him out, but then he knocked Swerve out by hauling him in some lockers, and He wants to fight him again. The ball's in his court. Another rivalry that will never end on NXT. And then we got the sit-down interview with Beth Phoenix and Io Shirai. I really quite enjoyed this. They talked about her winning the title in your house. I would have loved that callback, of course. They replayed sort of some of the big moments of her title reign. And then, of course, unfortunately, her losing that title to Raquel Gonzalez at TakeOver Stand and Deliver. She said Raquel Gonzalez was unquestionably her biggest challenge. She will have another shot. You know, she wants her rematch. But I did like the fact that she went, I want a rematch, but I've been champion for like 300 odd days. My body needs time to recover. Just, yeah, that's exactly what would happen in real life if this was, you know, a proper sport sort of thing. Presley the Pomeranian interrupts, and there's a sentence I didn't think I'd say. Hops up on the table. Frankie Monet comes in and says, oh, I'm sorry about him. I'm sorry about my chonk doggle. She congratulates Io Shirai on her title reign. She says, well, seeing as you're taking some, and also sort of backhand compliments. Beth, I used to love watching you when I was growing up all those years ago. But she says, well, if you're taking some time off, I'll tell you what, I'll keep the seat warm for the best woman in the women's division. And then Shirai just gets angry at her, shouts at her in Japanese and says, I like cats. Aside from the fact I'm more of a dog person than a cat person, Sidge, what did you think of what they did here with Io Shirai and with Frankie Monet, who you've just seen for the first time?
Again, I feel like I'm living down to my reputation here because I had two developments on this show that I've kind of been crying out for, and I didn't like the execution of either. I've wanted Kyle O'Reilly to channel the old charisma, right? He didn't like it. I wanted Io Shirai to be framed in this new sort of way that can actually drive storylines beyond the deadening beatdown challenge formula. And I didn't like this particularly either. Ultimately, every wrestling segment functions to make you want to watch a fight between the people involved in it. And this didn't. It's character progression for Io Shirai in the sense that they're trying to, I think, like, soften her, humanize her a bit, make her connect with people, which I admire. I feel like it's the perfect time to do it because there's nothing worse than no-selling a defeat. As you said, Wilborn, really great point. It's fantastic that they've said, like, my body's knackered. It sells the gravity of everything she's done. Love that continuity. Love the idea that she isn't just saying, I want the title back, I'm still the best, because you're not. You're absolutely not. Raquel Gonzalez is. It's time for you to introspect and do these different character beats. I like the bones of it all. Just didn't really think the execution flattered Io Shirai particularly, and I don't really care about the match.
Yeah, I think I agree. This was good and not great at the same time. I couldn't decide if I liked how... So Frankie Monet is a heel of this much we know now because she's picked a moment when the champion has very explicitly admitted that they're kind of feeling a bit weak, and she's effectively come, I know she didn't do it literally, but has come to like lay down the challenge.
It's not her fault, her. It's the dog's fault, if anything.
This is it. Like that's quite a good like marker of who she is as a person. To spot an opportunity. She's mouthed off to the champion last week, but it was, again, left a bit grey as to whether or not she was doing that as a babyface or a heel. This week, it's abundantly clear. She's trying to, like, pick apart a wounded and slightly damaged ex-champion. I don't mind that. I don't mind the outcome, certainly. Like, I'm very, very intrigued to see how the match plays out between the two. Like, it's, again, one of them situations where WWE... like one of the benefits very occasionally of them signing so many talents is you get a combination that you just didn't realize you wanted. And we've arrived at one, you know, this is a match I want to watch. But yeah, I similar to Sidgwick, I guess I'm not sure. I didn't feel a great deal for the execution. I found myself just thinking about some more of the extraneous details. To be honest, the first thing I felt when Io Shirai rocked up and was talking about what's next and all that, I felt a little bit sad. I think this is like, obviously she's doomed on the main roster. Of course she's doomed. But NXT has given me no evidence to suggest that he won't be doomed by staying put. Doesn't, like, Adam Cole feel doomed? You know, doesn't sort of Kyle O'Reilly a little bit at the moment feel doomed? Gargano, Ciampa, the list goes on. They're going to be doomed regardless if they stay put. I've not been... I need NXT to show to me that they're as good at cycling down characters if they're not going to lose them. And, like, one last thing in reference to because I'm not particularly a cat person, but I'm definitely not a dog person. So I felt like I identified more with the Yoshi Rai off the back of this. But a shout out to Will Terry on Twitter, who got in touch with us to say that what she was actually doing was confirming that her and Finn Balor are going to be in the mixed match challenge together.
Yes. So,
big fan of that. Long-term storytelling. Yeah, I want the match more than I wanted any of this promo stuff. They showed me something that I want to see. But I don't know. I don't know how long you get away with the Io Shirai on this brand. Like, it really, like, this thing about wrestlers feeling like they've completed NXT isn't going to go away just because NXT is its own show. Now that's existed too long.
Sage, casting vote, cats or dogs?
I like both. Prefer dogs, but I generally like both.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, let's move on to the next bit of Adam Wilborn's E-Fed. We want a tag team match. How about we have Breezango versus the grizzled young veterans? Sounds good to me. Breezango already in the ring. They're marching about playing the Queen's Guard. They've got all the big hats and the red jackets on. And Zach Gibson is absolutely furious.
He's furious.
They are blagging, pretending to be a member of the Queen's Guard. So we get the match. I did like, just, you know, we talk about it when we talk about FTR, for example, in it's not exactly the same, but in AEW, just like nice, classic, old school heel bollocks. James Drake comes off the top. Oh, tweak my knee. Ref, come here, I've tweaked my knee. Referee's checking on him. Zach Gibson walks over, just pokes Fandango in the eye. And it wasn't the finish. It was just good. Oh, you bastard. I love you. So they work over Fandango. Eventually, he gets to Tyler Breeze, who you know, gets the hot tag, runs wild. Eventually, though, they cut him off. He misses a blind tag that allows them to hit the Ticket to Mayhem. 1, 2, 3. They'd also already called out MSK as part of their entrance as well. Good stuff, this Amphlett.
Yeah. I can't do backflips over any of it, but I did enjoy it. I did like it. Again, it like plays to that, to NXT's functional side. Very clear the team being built and the team there to do the job, but that can do the job in a very entertaining way. Far more than just card fillers, Breezango, like as we know before. I thought the Queen's Guard thing was obviously quite a nice fitting tribute to Prince Philip RIP, but if they wanted to pay tribute to a fallen institution, why didn't they just wear Liverpool shirts? That would have wound up Zach Gibson even more, wouldn't it? The beauty of a Breezango at this point is that they don't feel, and we talk about ages quite a lot, and TV ages, somehow, for as long as they've been back on NXT, and as long as they've existed as an act, in the matches, they don't feel ancient. Mm. So somehow, it's like dark arts stuff. This must be like that kind of, God, Tyler Breeze is a gift to this locker room in the ways that we don't understand. But like, I enjoy these matches way more than I think I'm going to when I kind of think, oh, Christ, Breezango again, right? They've done the pat a bit. The match is going to be... And then it's never really that drab. It's often pretty good. It's really helpful when you've got more boring tag teams, but the Grizzled Young Vets are not that. So what you get, I think you're probably right to draw upon this, is very much what felt closer to an FTR Dynamite squash than a boring NXT mid-card tag match. All the better for it. Grizzled Young Vets remain the perfect opponents for MSK whenever they want to go back to it. And you sense that they're just being kept this level of hot for the next takeover.
Yeah, I like this. I can't really add anything more other than to build on your point, Wilborn, about the heel spot. I thought James Drake measured it perfectly, where it just felt enough like an actual standstill before they subverted it with the heel stuff. Like, I thought that was really nice.
I think he either sold the leg or sold something earlier on, and you thought, oh, he's actually genuinely tweaked something for us.
No, it's kind of like he's really accomplished, vastly underrated. Nice little match highlighted by that particular work. I would like Zach Gibson to do more worthy stuff on the promo than say soon. Like yesterday, he's not just the panto villain guy who can say things in an irritating way and make you go, come on, baby faces, go back and give him another punch. Like, give him a microphone for a long enough time, he can seriously wind you up. Seriously wind you up. I just think they need to build their characters more beyond, oh, he's that guy with the irritating British accent who's kind of got that quality about him. Self-fights, because he can do it. Like, it's virgin on catchphrase fair now. The whole idea of a promo, it showed for promote. I want to start promoting stuff. I was character built. It just feels a little bit, to quote my esteemed colleague, like, what's your thing? I can say scene. I did on the wind up. I want to be wound up.
I did like that he was caught up by his own anger this week at how things have gone. He's like, very soon, actually. Like, he kind of like, he butchered his own catchphrase to make it clear that he's getting pretty pissed off that they're not tag team champions.
Absolutely blagging that you've got a New Japan World subscription. Always go back to that. And I completely agree. Like, it just, him potentially walking up to the plexiglass and just going around, just doing the old comedian, like who's on the front row sort of thing, just going up and just going, this guy, or whatever. Or it's, you know, it, like classic, he could do the basic sort of like, oh, it's a good job you've got a mask on because he's so hideous, or he'd do it a lot better than that. But yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying there, Sige. Right, we had back-to-back backstage stuff here, both of which I absolutely adored. There was going to be an interview with Indy Hartwell and Johnny Gargano, the gem that he is on NXT, walked in and going, no, there's going to be no interview today. He literally took the microphone away from Mackenzie Mitchell, so she couldn't even ask any questions. He's just like, no, bollocks. No, she's not going to get with Dexter Lumis. No. In the midst of all this, Bronson Reed comes in and talks about, just like I do, loving love. Stop trying to control everyone, Johnny. He wants a rematch with Gargano. Gargano in the best way. Back of the line, says to him, and North American Championship. And Austin, I really like this development with Austin Theory. Of Austin Theory is just a thick twat, basically. He's like, yeah, Bronson Reed, you go back of the line, which is why I spoke to the GM and I said, you're only going to get a title shot if you can beat me. Gargano's like, what are you doing? He literally beat you last week. He poked him in the ribs. He went, oh, yeah, oh, sorry, I forgot about that. And there's a match next week. If he beats Theory, Reed gets another shot of the title. Convoluted, but you know what, Sige? I'll allow it. This popped me, this backstage segment.
Oh, you're not allowed to get popped by this. Do you know how many times? Don't encourage them. Do you know how many times I've seen Bronson Reed versus Austin Theory? They're like a best of 28. Like, see, they wrestle all the goddamn time, and it magnifies the poor. We'll call it month to month and be kind, because it's not like day to day, week to week, like Raw. But it's very much month to month. Like Bronson Reed, Gargano, and Austin Theory again. Like, it was sort of later in the night, like Candice LeRae is still having a feud with them two again. This is proper content churn, this. And look, I like Johnny Gargano in this role, as frivolous as it is, but it's not enough to like a little that was funny. Like, that's not enough to make me go to not go Bronson Reed versus Austin Theory again. Like, are you joking me with this match, with this combination? Like, they can't book They can write mildly amusing lines at times. That's fine. They got a book.
This gave me like the total opposite feelings of the Io Shirai segment, in that I enjoyed what I was watching and didn't want to see the combination at the end. Like, I've got no interest in Bronson Reed being 50-50 again, even if like this time it extends a little bit further.
I like Papa John.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, I think Papa John's an awesome nickname for Gargano. They make tremendous trophies and reasonable pizzas. But it's just like, it's one of the things at this point where I kind of rely on Gargano's patter to save booking like this, because like none of the destinations entertain me. I was going to bring up the exact same point Cedric made. I can't believe because there's nobody else to fight them. I cannot believe they've gone back to like LeRae wanting the tag belts again. And we'll get onto that segment in a bit. But like, this felt much the same. It was like, oh, it's Bronson Reed, is it? Where it's a good job we had like a 3-match build to the title shot you already lost. Like, it is funny, the idea that like Austin Theory is so stupid that back of the line means one match. Like, that's pretty good that like he can be that thick and set this up this way. But just like, you know, if like you're so desperate to get to Bronson Reed, North American champion, maybe put the belt on him when he's actually got momentum and night 2 of a takeover, rather than have your heel champion no sell most of work and beat him with relative ease. That's where the content churn feeling comes. It's like you had that, but you blew it. So now you're selling it anyway, because like you feel that it isn't past its sell by date, when a lot of people watching probably feel the opposite.
Yeah, I'm not fussed about seeing the match again. I just enjoy what it was. I'm just going to use this time to score. It's got an open goal here, Hamlet. Michael Sidgwick, have your team ever won the EFL trophy, now known as the Papa John's trophy?
Yeah.
Mine has. Hamlet's has. So just saying, you know.
Absolute, I mean, Shelbyville patter there.
Right, next backstage segment. It was great because it had Cameron Grimes in it, of course. This time he's, of course, furious about Kyle O'Reilly attacking him. But then an envelope turns up and he's happy again because I still don't know what an NFT is. He thinks he's got a winning bid on an NFT, whatever that is. But it's been outbid by Ted DiBiase. Damn you, $1 million man! More of this, please, Michael Hamflett.
Like, the original black and gold wrestler on the black and gold brand, like, the day that he shows up in his sparkly suit on, like, a takeover in NXT, it's going to be mint, isn't it? Like, this is such a well-set-up cameo. They've done the work to make me want to see the $1 million man, and not in that way that, like, it's Legends Night on Raw. It's 40 guys. It's like...
seconds of $1 million men left.
Yeah. He's at the last party you'd ever want to attend. Like, it's... They've really put...
He's hanging around with Heidenreich. So he would never hang out with
him. Ted DiBiase sharing memories with Kelly. Like, they're just... this is going to be brilliant. Like, this is going to be great. They've really put a shift in. It's going to be funny. It's frivolous. A lot of it's frivolous. Don't know that it's going to get Cameron Grimes to the next level or anything, but can't wait to see it.
If anyone's anxious about the teasers and if they're going to be fulfilled, like, can they really get Ted DiBiase? Like, you give that guy 100 quid nowadays. It's a bit it's a bit stark now, but you chuck him 100 quid for Legends Night, he'll come and do his laugh. Like, I don't libel myself, but he'll be there. He will be there.
Did I see him in a Lacey Von Erich video the other day? Was Biossi, Ted DiBiase knocking about? No, I don't know. I can't remember.
I saw Steamboat in one.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Everybody's got a price, and his is about 30 quid plus effort.
Right, Sidge, let's move on to the debut, or the in-ring debut of Saray. She faced Zoe Stark, and weird this in a good way. But, you know, you thought, we went into it going, okay, this is going to be a big showcase, you know, effectively a squash match. But she was facing Zoe Stark, and Zoe Stark got in quite a lot of offense. But it did really showcase what an excellent talent. You know, we admitted ourselves, we don't really know a lot about her. I was chatting to Andy Murray, and he said, expect big things from her today. She got in a modified sort of Texas cloverleaf at one point, and Stark gets to the ropes. They sort of go back and forth. Saray lands some nice looking drop kicks, fisherman's buster for a near fall. Then Stark gets back, and she misses a 450. And then Saray kicks her, hits the Saito suplex. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Tony Storm runs down and attacks Zoe Stark after Zoe's shaken hands and been all very amicable with Saray. Post-match, Saray sort of checks on her after that. But yeah, what did you reckon to Saray's NXT debut, Michael Sidgwick?
Oh, God, I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. Basically, a star was created and the star substantiated the hype with like a quite awesome, but not too awesome because they're clever enough still to recognize that you don't, you know, give everything away. Not all of the spots, not all the dramatic swings and momentum, not every counter. Almost perfectly measured. If I've got one complaint, pedantic, it's that I wish I'd got another week of this. They could have done a 3-minute traditional NXT old school introduction. And then this is perfect second appearance fair. Maybe they could have got away with the first 3-minute. Here's my moves. Then next week, the opponent will get something. Other than that, it worked. Like, I always love in pro wrestling when we think we know how the magic's done and the architecture of everything. I still love looking at a move and thinking, oh, Christ, how did he do that without like really hurting someone? And that stamp she did to Zoe Stark's back, I got that feeling of, oh, how do you do that? That looked absolutely incredible. Just thought it was an incredibly accomplished performance. Thought they measured the ratio of offense particularly well because ultimately they can plant the seeds now for Zoe Stark time and time and time and time again, just not getting it done. And then that can mutate into the heel turn. Like, lots going on here. Perfect opponent, perfect length, perfect ratio of offense. Everything's rated, looked absolutely great. Ultimately, what you want from this appearance is two things. You want the hype to be realized, and you want to see more of the person you've just seen. Absolute blockbuster smash hit on both remits.
Echo all of that. Loved this. Could feel as I was watching just how right they were getting this, because what I knew I was watching was great, and yet I knew there was better to come. I'm an absolute sucker for an old-fashioned WWE babyface fire-up, and Saray's already mastered that, because that last sort of minute and a half where you knew Stark was doomed was exhilarating, and she didn't, and you sense that she wasn't even like unleashing her best arsenal, not tonight anyway. She'd got the measure of Stark after 6 or so minutes, and thus she knew what she could put her away with. That's not to say that frigging suplex wasn't quality, like really, really good stuff. She hits hard, which is kind of like, I guess what you come to expect from a newcomer. They've got to like give it some welly on that first night, because if the stuff looks a little bit soft, you immediately start to doubt some of the credibility that you've had instilled in them. Could not love the delivery of this more. Zoe Stark, I kind of mentioned this to you before, Wilbon. Zoe Stark already feels like she's becoming one of those weekly, reliable, good match wrestlers, which is like, it's a huge credit to her, but also I think a credit to the way that they presented her, the way they've thought about how to introduce this character. There are many names that do the rounds that in like women's wrestling that you want to see. It came up a lot with AEW where like there would be a tournament announced and somebody that knows way more than I do on Twitter would fire in with like 20 wrestlers. Like AEW could sign. Didn't feel like Zoe Stark was ever part of any of these conversations. It's as if she's been hidden away and NXT have just managed her arrival brilliantly. That's not to undermine how great Saray was here, but this wasn't just her night. This was another fantastic night for Saray. No problem with the basic storytelling of Tony Storm laying down the beating on Zoe Stark. She's angry at having felt an embarrassment of being like, you know, kind of like shown up by Stark a couple of weeks ago. So there's your feud. Great. Proper. Christ, it was just nice to get some really good title-free mid-card women's division booking. This is what Raw and SmackDown has just like, there's been zero of this for about a year. And it's disgraceful how much WWE gets away with it, because that's what this is. Like, there's no titles involved here. It's everybody just fighting to work up the ladder and get a bit of respect.
Pulsating at its very best. Like that goddamn spot. I love when wrestlers just create the absolute illusion of, now it's going to hurt her. Danger. When Stark was draped over the second row, like drop kick, cleaning the mush, that head rebounding back over the second rope. I love that. I love that because you know the masters who know how to do it. Legitimate danger. I could not have been higher on this, really.
We've got a backstage interview with NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez, flanked by Dakota Kai. Kai, a lot of we here. There was a lot of, yeah, we won the title. Yeah, we did that. And I think they do seem to have taken on board, you know, what people have been saying. This is exactly the direction they need to be heading in. Hamblet, you were concerned, you know, about Gonzalez becoming, as you said, sort of Diesel back in the day. I'm just like, I'm a good old-fashioned babyface now, immediately after winning the title. How do you think she came across here, saying things like, line up any challengers and she'll knock them down?
I love this whole segment, man. Like, to sort of, I like to think I've got great taste. I don't think it's quite as great and refined as Sidgwick in it, so I've got more of a tolerance for, like, really thick wrestling. But this is sort of the, this is, like, almost precision engineered for how clever to thick I want my pro wrestling to be. Like, this segment, it's, like, very WWE when it could book. They're showing you everything, but the wrestlers aren't telling you. And that's enough. Like, lots of we, lots of Dakota Kai, like, forcing out that laughing off of, yeah, we can't always get what we want. I know what you're doing. I know you're trying to steer it, but we know what's going on. Like, it's not, like, super clever, but it's pro wrestling doesn't have to be. I just love the presentation of this. I want 3 months and 3 Raquel Gonzalez feuds of this as, like, the relationship crumbles. Let's not forget that before Raquel Gonzalez won the title, they were doing that thing where kind of she was carrying the team as well, where Kai would lose the matches that they would lose and Gonzalez would win the ones that they would win. So this is, you know, this hasn't just existed from the second that Gonzalez has won the belt. Like, measured perfectly, all of this.
Feels like Ryan Ward is booking it, and that's the highest compliment I can pay.
Yeah, just simple stuff here. Like, when she retains the title, she gets handed the title via Dakota Kai when she's fighting, maybe without the title on the line. Kai holds it at ringside. Look at what they did with Sasha Banks and Bayley. Just do that, basically. It's really simple stuff. We had another backstage segment with Candice LeRae trying to get Indy Hartwell's head in the game. She's excited because she's seen Dexter Lumis, basically. LeRae thinks she's got Hartwell with her as she goes to, you know, complain about getting another, or complain to the tag team champions, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, Hartwell hasn't bothered to go along with her. As LeRae realizes this, she's down 2-on-1. She hoys coffee in Ember Moon's face. And then the baby faces drag her off to kick the crap out of her in the locker room. We'll deal with this more when we get to the second half of this. Let's move on instead, Sige, to the Kushida match. I thought they made Kushida feel like such a big deal with the video package that came before that, and him winning the Cruiserweight Championship was some good stuff. And he came out and he cut a promo saying, look, I won this title via an open challenge, so I'm going to do an open challenge tonight. And it was answered by Oney Lorcan. I thought these two worked really well together. Kushida wrestling barefoot, then putting over the fact that he's got this background in MMA. That got me very excited to see where they go next with this. Their back and forth match, Lorcan hits Kushida with a blockbuster. Kushida kicks out. Kushida then starts getting chopped over and over and over again, and that sort of fires him up, wakes him up. He's been targeting the arms throughout the match, and he locks in the hoverboard lock for the submission victory to retain the Cruiserweight Championship. Post-match, Santos Escobar and the rest of Legado del Fantasma come down. They attack Kushida, but MSK run down to make the save, and that is going to head towards quite an exciting 6-man next week. But before we talk about that, Sage, your thoughts on this match?
Nice and nasty and, like, really accomplished. Locked in a certain gear that I couldn't quite escape. They've got balls booking a trios match, like, on Dynamite's, on Dynamite's illustrious form in that genre over 2021. Because she's just going to be stark bollock naked next week. Basis of how quickly he's losing his clothes. This wasn't blow away. This wasn't blow away, but it's the kind of action you kind of only get on NXT on TV these days. And I do think it's a nice change of pace. I just felt like, yeah, the certain gear that it was worked in. But we're talking like 3.25, 3.5-star matches here. But again, we're numb to it, which you always point out, like, yeah, it's obviously like really quite good. But, you know, it's just hard to get like electrified by it.
It's kind of a thing with Kushida where, despite, and like when I say efforts, I really mean his best efforts, there's a struggle sometimes to make some of his matches memorable that I also can't work out why. There's like when his explosive quality really shows itself, it's so much better. Like, I think the Pete Dunne match at TakeOver was a perfect example of that. I want more of them. And I don't think we're going to get them every week. But because I know he's got it in him, I think he's sort of a perfect cruiserweight champion. I am way more, I feel like we've dug out your faves quite a lot this last year, Will Button, but I'm way more invested in Kushida cruiserweight title matches than I was Santos Escobar ones. And I can't exactly pinpoint why, because I don't think this match was blow away brilliant or anything. But he feels more of a dynamic wrestler to hold that belt, to try and return it to its, I don't want to say glory days, but like the pretty great TV matches of late 2019. That's what that belt needs to represent ultimately. It needs to represent a 10 to 15 minute distraction almost. They're never going to book. They're never going to tell stories. So forget about that and just try and get the best out of like 10 or 15 minutes of a television match. I like the six man because I love MSK. And if, Sidgwick's right. There's a bar being set by these trios matches that NXT cannot leap over, but they're giving themselves the best chance with MSK. They'll get as close as they can do with MSK and Kushida. That's a pretty exciting three-man team.
Yeah, really excited for that next week. Again, more stuff that I really like on this show. We had a backstage promo from Mercedes Martinez. She talks about Raquel Gonzalez being scared of her, not answering her challenge. She said, "All right, I'm tired of hearing Dakota Kai answer for you. So tell you what, I'll take out Dakota Kai and then there's going to be no one between me, you and that title." Yeah, good stuff. Very briefly, this advert.
Yeah, kind of the same. Apply the same to the Gonzalez stuff earlier on. They're just thinking about how they're booking her and thus they're thinking about how they're booking her opponents. It's proper, like, wider universe storytelling where it's not just about one character at a time. And when Martinez beats Dakota Kai to get her match against Raquel Gonzalez, it's just another sort of chink in the armor of these two heels that feel like they're on top of the world.
And this was the point where we got another backstage segment with The Way, Gargano talking to Austin Theory, can you stop being so bloody stupid, basically, trying to find out when he actually had time to speak to William Regal in amongst all this. Candice LeRae shows up, she's just had the crap kicked out of her by the babyface women's tag team champions in NXT. They're trying to find out what's happened. Sorry, this is the part where Indy Hartwell has seen Dexter Lumis. That's what obviously distracted her earlier on. She's all excited. Oh, and also she saw Regal, and they're getting another tag team title rematch. Thoughts on this and the previous segment where the baby faces dragged someone into a room and kicked the crap out of them, Michael Sidgwick?
It's almost as bad as the Raw women's tag team scene. Dynamics are all over the place. Just regurgitating the same dynamic, and it's not just within this tag title picture. Like Candice LeRae versus Shotzi Blackheart has now lasted longer than Miro versus and Kip Sabian versus Best Friends. Like, this is astonishingly tired, like unacceptably lazy churn, and you're gonna struggle to get two dorks like Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon like over as a relevant concern. Like, what I like about them is that they can go. One's got a great finish. One's got like an attitude and an energy that I really like. So I do like them. But they're like the nerds. They are total nerds. And them acting like tossers is not going to help their corner.
Mm. I'll do the one good thing first, because then I hate the rest of this. Really, like, funny. Maybe just NXT funny, I don't know. But that Indy Hartwell was buzzed that Dexter Lumis made eye contact. That's quite a cute gag, isn't it? Like, of all the guys.
Things in school when you were like, oh, right, she's in love.
Eye contact. Like, Dexter, that's all Dexter Lumis has done with every single person he's met in the last year, isn't it? That's quite nice. But, yeah, what really like saddened me about that beatdown, that Candice, at least, so counter the Kyle O'Reilly, Cameron Grimes criticism, she threw some coffee at them, right? So like, have a fight by all means. However, this made me think that Triple H and Shawn Michaels believed that when they put the Spirit Squad in a box and sent them to OVW, that was somehow charming. That was like this quaint little babyface trait. Weren't we a couple of massive dickheads? That was like quite sweet, wasn't it? Like, because that's what they've imposed here on Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart, and that's not who these people are. For all that they play hard with this tank and Ember Moon's got the eclipse, I think you're supposed to know there's like a soft interior to this exterior front. And like, this does away with that. They're just like, they're just gum chewing babyface WWE dickheads. They're just Matt Riddle and Keith Lee turned up on that SmackDown to bully Sami Zayn for no reason. It's all of that, you know. I didn't like that. I didn't like it as a setup. Candice LeRae and Shotty Blackheart have been on opposing sides at 3 takeovers. You know, that's let me just do a quick count in my head. That's as many takeovers as Sasha's and Bayley worked against each other, if you include a fatal four-way. Like, it's not, it ain't that, you know, it's not transcendent stuff. This has gone on inexcusably long. And what this is, there's a systemic issue here, like away from the workers, these belts shouldn't exist. The women's tag belts should have been won and brought to NXT. Not like, you shouldn't have had that screwy, cheap finish that necessitated the invention of title belts. You should have just had them taken off Nia and Shayna and bring down main roster tag teams every now and then for the fighting champions to fight. There isn't a division here. That's why they're going back to this.
Well, if they did that, they wouldn't have the quality that's going on with the women's tag division. never have I wanted a roll-up to win a match more than what came next. Ever-Rise, who, as always, are turning me on. they fought bloody Imperium, and it was a squash, effectively. Killian Dane comes down to ringside to distract them. And that allows Chase Parker to get a roll-up, but unfortunately only get a 2 count, got murdered as a result of it. Drake Maverick comes down, full scrappy-do, let me at him, gets carried away to the back. And then, yeah, Imperium just hit Parker with the doomsday uppercut, European uppercut thing that they do, and they get the pinfall victory. Anything to say about this, Sidge?
Been a long time since I've missed that, the sight of that Everton fan in the front row of Full Sail. But I feel as though if they were there, they would have exposed Imperium for the absolute state of the act they are versus how fun Ever-Rise are. I think Ever-Rise would be getting over in a big way in that old, very loyal Full Sail crowd. And they'd be laughing at all the spots. They'd be completely with them. And then Imperium would get the advantage as the pushed project and the crowd would go quiet and they'd be numbed. Yeah, they'd be absolutely numb to it. Like, NXT are getting away with the presentation of how these two tag teams are put across. And like to the same extent, Killian Dane and Drake Maverick, because they can control the audience reactions. I have absolutely no doubt that Ever-Rise would have come across as the team getting over out of this if this was in Full Sail. But we're not. We're in the grizzled black future of NXT, and Imperium are sort of the perfect act for the CWC in far too many ways.
Yeah, I think the only thing I took away from this, aside from great obviously seeing Ever-Rise on NXT, is the fact that they acknowledge that Ever-Rise does that pre-show thing, and they did it for Takeover Stand and Deliver. And I thought maybe someone's had their eyes open to all the stuff that they do separate. There's like a Saturday morning show and stuff that they do. They're great, and they deserve more time to do these sort of skits and what have you. But yeah, it was just a squash for Imperium to further the story with them and Killian Dane. And then we got the main event, Kyle O'Reilly versus Cameron Grimes. Kyle O'Reilly walking past Karrion Kross and Scarlett. Have they been just stood there all night, Sidge? Presumably just as you walk your way to the ring?
Yeah, they are.
If the main event was Kyle O'Reilly versus Cameron Grimes, I really enjoyed this because it's Kyle O'Reilly versus Cameron Grimes. Again, I thought they worked really well together. Chain wrestling, of course, with O'Reilly majority in control. Then Grimes hit a German suplex. He's targeting the neck of Kyle O'Reilly. He's working him over as we go to the break. O'Reilly comes back. He hits a PK. Then Grimes fights back, hits a spinning slam. O'Reilly counters a suplex with a leg lock. Grimes hit a super kick. And O'Reilly, a couple of times in this match, did the old wacky line where he comes back and hits a clothesline after going into the ropes and spilling through and coming back again. O'Reilly fires up. He hits Axe and Smash Brainbuster, goes up top, and then hits that jumping knee off the top that he used to finish off Adam Cole, to finish off Cameron Grimes and get the victory. What do you think of the main event, Michael Hamflett?
Really great, man. Like, everything that Kyle O'Reilly currently can't do behind a microphone, he's still doing in the ring in normal circumstances and not 40 minutes, obviously. Like, this is why you push Kyle O'Reilly, because he's a he's an underrated sports entertainer, because we know that he's a great pro wrestler, but he worked here at a level that I think does present him as a main event concern, as a title contender, and not in a gritty fist fight with Finn Balor but in like this technical warfare, in this way that he can like this modernized, I don't know, would it even be classed as hybrid anymore, because it feels like it's been normalized by becoming the standard style, which is very, very good at it. He wrestles like he doesn't know that he's the size he is sometimes, which I really appreciate. Cameron Grimes is great here as well. Like for what was supposed to be, I think, almost like a showcase for Kyle O'Reilly as the complete babyface main eventer, because Takeover Standard Deliver wasn't that. For what was supposed to be Kyle O'Reilly's showcase, I thought he was expert in how much he gave Cameron Grimes here. Cameron Grimes, his size makes me forget that he's really good at splatting people on their heads. And it's quite easy for him to therefore like assume an advantage for that middle portion that he has to take as the heel so that O'Reilly can make his comeback. It was like, this was quite formulaic in its arrangement, but the work was so good that I didn't care. I knew who was winning. I didn't have that feeling of drama. I didn't have that sense that like O'Reilly was particularly in any danger. I just really enjoyed what I was watching. Like way more of this in your takeover matches. Honestly, like loads more of this in like very like simplistic but entertaining presentation of the wrestlers you've signed because they're great wrestlers. Like I at no point did I feel that it was overwhelmed by Kyle O'Reilly's new character or indeed Grimes' character work. I thought this was, again, we're talking like in measures. This was just measured just right for me.
Yeah, this is really, really strong. Really, really strong. I really like the story of the character work of Cameron Grimes. Like, he's so great. Like, the amount of times, because he's this idiot, but he's also skilled. Yeah. More than anything else, he's also an idiot who's just an incredibly impulsive guy who, at the merest hint of any kind of excitement, just goes ballistic. Or at any kind of slight, he will just, like, blow his top. Anytime he got momentum in this match, he just exploded into a position that's made him vulnerable because he was cut off with the submission work of Kyle O'Reilly. Like, they were trying to tell the story of, look, I know we present him as one because it's funny, but now's the time because he's in the ring. Like, Cameron Grimes is actually really good at this. And they just, again, the words measured, like they measured his character work perfectly in this match. Kyle O'Reilly's awesome. He always is. He's so much better because he's explosive and he's persona is of a fighter. He's not this methodical trope brawler. So when you get him in a short, snappy, explosive fight, you get the very best of the character. Yeah, really strong main event.
Yeah, really good ending to this week's show, which I really enjoyed. But let us know your thoughts on NXT this week on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, of course, later on today, our preview of AEW Dynamite. Also, completely forgot to mention this. Did you notice the Michael Cole-ism that we got from Beth Phoenix? I don't know why this just popped into my head. She dropped the Swishing Gears line. She used it.
She did.
In the same segment, she said, and I quote, "Now that we know what's on the horizon for Io Shirai, what's next?" Get what you're trying to say, but just say it better.
Anyway, yeah, join us for the AEW Dynamite preview a little bit later on today. But for now, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.